Hi, this is the voice, Michael Schiavello. You're listening to the Premium Oddscast, hosted by leading MMA odds maker Nick Kalikas, fight scientist and author of Fightnomics, Reid Kuhn, and MMA journalist Brian Heminger. The absolute best UFC betting info, picks, statistics, and analysis from the most respected authority in mixed martial arts betting, MMAoddsbreaker.com.
Welcome to the Premium Oddscast, presented by Five Dime Sportsbook. I'm Brian Heminger, joined today by leading mixed martial arts oddsmaker Nick Kalikas to break down this Saturday's UFC Fight Night 123 event, which takes place in Fresno, California. If you're unfamiliar with our format, Nick and I will break down the fight card from top to bottom, providing extensive analysis and a pick for each fight after doing our film study for the event. Looking back at our last event, we lost 4.05 units after going 0-2 on our premium bets for UFC 218. We also lost our one-unit free bet. Back to the present, UFC Fight Night 123 features a 13-fight card in total and will be aired on UFC Fight Pass and Fox Sports 1 this Saturday night. Let's dive right in. Now kicking things off on Fight Pass is a middleweight contest between Antonio Braga Neto, who is 9-2 with one no contest, and Trevin Giles, who is 10-0. Now, Nick, where did you open this fight, and how has the public shifted things so far?
I opened Giles -185, the comeback on Neto at +145. So right now, looking over Five Dimes, our sponsored sportsbook, Giles is currently -250, the comeback on Neto is +210. So a little bit more action coming in Giles' way. I do agree with the action Giles' way, especially considering Neto's been out for so long. I mean, he's been out since 2014, his split decision loss to Hester. I mean, he's basically – he took a hiatus because he had a lot of personal issues going on, money problems from what I read, and was able to look up or whatever. I guess he basically quit fighting. He quit his job so he can make more money as a poker player is what the storyline is, and supposedly he did okay in poker. So that's not necessarily what you normally think. But so that was his career change in the meantime. And, of course, he had some injuries along the way as well. So he's been on the shelf for that long, playing poker. I mean, not in the gym as much as you'd like to see, but he has been training along the way as well. But he's ballooned up to like 247 pounds as well at one point. Now, obviously, he was expected to make his UFC return at the end of this year. So little by little, I'm sure he's been taking off that weight. But for ballooning up to 247 pounds and fighting at middleweight again with the time off, with all the circumstances in place here, you definitely got to lean Giles' way. So that being said, as far as skill set, I mean, Neto does have some skill. I mean, he's obviously a BJJ whiz. I mean, the guy has exceptional jiu-jitsu. His stand-up's actually not that bad for a jiu-jitsu player either. He does push a high pace. Now, he does have a little bit of problem with his cardio. That seems to be an issue even before, you know, his hiatus or whatnot as well. And sometimes he tends to kind of take his foot off the gas as well. So there's some things to like about Neto, and there's a lot of things to not like. So everything leaning towards Giles' way. Giles is an athlete, man. I mean, the guy is definitely a talented fighter. He's still developing. That's the crazy thing. I mean, he's still only going to get better and better. Of course, he made his official debut at light heavyweight, but now he's dropping back down to middleweight, which he should be at middleweight. And he looked great in his UFC debut. So he's got a complete skill set. I mean, obviously it features his wrestling. I think that's basically the best attribute of his game. He's got really good ground and pound and a sub game to go along with it. Now, that should kind of neutralize each other out here because Neto's sub game should trump Giles, you would think. So I don't expect these guys to sub each other here, honestly. Then on the feed, actually, Giles is pretty light, and he's got some okay boxing as well. So I think what happens here is Giles just stays busier. Giles just stays more active. Giles stays out of bad spots, and he just basically beats Neto up to the point where he wins a decision when it does hit the scorecards, if it goes that long. If Neto doesn't come into shape here, obviously I don't even think he makes it to the cards, to be honest with you. So we'll see how it all plays out, but the lean definitely has to be Giles. But make no mistake, if Neto does show up and he is in better shape than we all think, then it's going to be a fight. It'll be a close competitive fight because, again, Neto is no slouch. But with all the circumstances, it's hard not to pick Giles in this fight, so that's the way I'm going to go.
I actually was a big fan of Neto when he made his UFC debut. I thought that the guy had a very bright future with his elite ground game, especially pulling off an impressive knee bar submission over Anthony Smith, who is actually on a big run in the UFC right now. So the fact that he took him out so quickly was impressive. And then he was out for a while, came back, faced Hester, arguably won that fight, in my opinion, and then disappeared. And my problem is, he's been gone. And as Nick said, he's been training off and on, but I mean, he was doing something else for the most part. So, you know, he's coming back, but now he's 30 years old. He's really no longer a prospect at this point. But from what I remember from watching him before, he does have an elite ground game still. And that, you know, he's not just going to forget all of that stuff, but I bet it's not as sharp as it used to be. He did have a good chin. So, Giles is going to have his hands full, and Neto wasn't a bad striker. So I think on the feet, it could be competitive, and Neto can eat some shots. So I would think that Giles will probably get the better of him on the feet, but I don't see Neto just getting steamrolled and knocked out quickly either. And if it goes to the ground, I mean, Giles should be able to get top position, but does he want to go to the ground against somebody that has been competitive in the ADCCs even? So I would say that if Giles is smart, he uses his wrestling in reverse, keeps his fight upright, and just tries to beat up Neto in space and maybe in the clinch. If this goes to the floor, you're playing with fire, because Neto does have a pretty impressive arsenal of submissions he can throw at him. So my pick is going to be Giles. I just think he's got a lot more momentum right now, and he looks like a solid prospect. And I just don't know what Neto we're going to see come fight night at this point. There's just way too many question marks with him after over 3 years away from the cage. So my pick is Giles. I think he can win convincingly. Now dropping down to the lightweight division, we have Chris Gritzmacher, who is 13-2, taking on Davy Ramos, who is 6-2. Now, Nick, what's the MMA oddsmaker's perspective on this one?
Up at Ramos, minus 180. The comeback on Gritzmacher at plus 140. Right now, looking over five dimes. It is currently Ramos bet up to minus 360. The comeback on Gritzmacher at plus 300. So, needless to say, Gritzmacher is not getting any respect from the bettors out there. It's a little bit of a head scratcher. I mean, I understand Ramos is the guy that's the jiu-jitsu specialist that is kind of the guy that's a little bit more hyped. He's been for a little while. He made his UFC debut in his last fight up a division, actually at welterweight. Now he's dropping back down to obviously a better weight class for him at lightweight as well. And he fought in a competitive decision loss, unfortunately for him, in his debut against Moraes, Sergio Moraes. So that was a tough fight. I mean, two jiu-jitsu guys kind of going at it there. But before that, though, also Ramos has some Bellator experience. He ended up actually losing to David Rickles in Bellator, which Rickles, we all know, is a pretty solid fighter. But still, with the guy coming into UFC with all that hype behind him and, you know, what you expect from him, a little bit of a letdown, I think, overall, but we'll see. I mean, he has a real good chance to make up all that, you know, the hype and to kind of prove people wrong and prove people that he is legit in this fight against Gritzmacher, because Gritzmacher is definitely a tough out, man. The guy's gritty. I know he's been bouncing back and forth between basically featherweight and lightweight a little bit. So I think from what we've seen from Gritzmacher at lightweight, I mean, I think he's obviously maybe a little bit small for the weight class, but at the same time, I think he kind of fights a little bit better at lightweight than he does featherweight as well. So he makes up for it with heart and the kind of gritty grinder that he is. I mean, his boxing, if you look at it from afar, it's really not that good. But as the fight progresses a lot of times, and if he's able to close a gap and he gets his distance right, his boxing actually gets better and it doesn't look that bad. So him being a grinder, him pushing a really high pace, I think if Ramos doesn't get him out of there early, this is going to be a fight, man. If it goes to scorecards, it's going to be really, really close. So I wouldn't be surprised if Gritzmacher actually pulls off the upset. So I don't necessarily agree with all the early action coming in Ramos's way. I think this is going to be far more competitive than most people think. That being said, Ramos could go out there and maybe submit him real quick as well, because Gritzmacher obviously in his last fight, and then maybe that's why people are fading him a little bit as well. He did get submitted by Chaz Skelly, and now he's going up against a jiu-jitsu ace, like I said, in Ramos. So maybe that could be the case. Obviously, it's a different matchup, though, with Skelly and Ramos in this spot. So I don't think it's kind of as tough of a matchup for Gritzmacher. I could be wrong, like I said, against Ramos here. But we'll see how it all plays out. The pick, though, is Ramos. I do lean his way slightly because, again, I think he will be aggressive on the feet. It's going to be close. These guys are going to be obviously slugging it out a little bit. And then on the ground, Ramos does have the better technical jiu-jitsu, and he should have the edge here as well. So hard not to point towards Ramos in this fight. But, again, at the price, I think it's a dog or pass situation now, to be honest with you. But I am going to pick Ramos to win.
And I understand people siding with Ramos with how Gritzmacher performed in his featherweight debut. But You know, Gritsmacher's a big guy, and I think that the cut to featherweight was too much for him. It took a little bit out of him. And honestly, Chaz Skelly is just a better version of Gritsmacher. He's a little bit more active. He's a bit of a better striker, has a little bit more power with on the feet. And I think Skelly's a little bit better with submissions on the ground. So, you know, it was a tough matchup, and he got outclassed. Against Ramos, though, I mean, this is a bit different because Ramos is not as good of a wrestler as Gritsmacher. He's not a great striker with a good amount of power. I think this is a much more competitive matchup than Gritsmacher against Skelly. So even though Gritsmacher's moving up from featherweight and then Ramos is moving down from welterweight, these guys are going to be about the same size. There's really not that much difference there. So I think this will be a competitive battle. I mean, they're both the same height. Gritsmacher will actually have a slight leg reach, and Ramos will have a slight reach with his hands. But I don't think that'll be that important either, because Ramos didn't show much on the feet. I mean, in his UFC debut, he got outstruck by Sergio Moraes over 3 rounds. And he really didn't show much. I mean, that was two elite Brazilian jiu-jitsu artists in a stand-up fight for 3 rounds. Is Ramos going to be able to get this fight to the floor? I mean, that's a big question. If he does, then yeah, he has a decent chance of pulling off a submission. But, you know, Gritsmacher has pretty strong wrestling, and his takedown defense is pretty good. Not amazing, but he has faced some pretty good wrestlers already, Gritsmacher. So I would think that he's faced better wrestlers than Ramos. So if he can keep this fight upright, even though Gritsmacher isn't an amazing striker, he can be active. And I think that he might be able to just outwork Ramos. Now, again, Ramos is an elite ground fighter. But even though he is an elite ground fighter, in 8 fights so far, I mean, he's only picked up 4 submissions. So that's a bit surprising to me. So I think what happens here is if it goes to the ground, Ramos probably wins a scramble and might be able to pull off a submission. But if it stays standing, Gritsmacher might just outwork him over the course of 3 rounds and might even wear him down, because that's kind of his style, that grinding style. So I'm going to go out on a limb here and call me crazy, but I think Chris Gritsmacher can win a decision in this fight. So my pick is going to be Gritsmacher. Now moving on to the main event of the Fight Pass prelims, we have Alejandro Perez, who is 19-6-1, taking on Yuri Alcantara, who is 34-8 with 1 no contest. Now, Nick, where did you open this fight, and how has the public shifted things so far?
I opened Alcantara -210, the comeback on Perez at +175, or excuse me, that was actually the current line right now, -210, +175, because it didn't move. My original opener was actually Alcantara -210, the comeback was Perez +160. So line margins have tightened up a little bit, but the favorite price is still the same at -210. So that being said, again, at +175 Perez, line margins have tightened up. Two action is coming in this fight, and I think a lot of people are just kind of hesitant to bet this fight. I mean, it's kind of a tricky fight. You have Perez, which is kind of the younger fighter that's up-and-coming guy that keeps on improving, obviously training at a good camp. He's just, like I said, he's getting better. I mean, from the Ultimate Fighter, there's no question that he's just turned into a completely better fighter, and that's saying a lot because, I mean, you know, I think he was okay coming from the Ultimate Fighter as it was. So he's putting in the work. He's improving his stand-up game. He's getting more confidence. The guy is a pretty well-rounded fighter. I mean, he's not going to dominate you on the feet. He's not going to dominate you with his wrestling or anything like that, but he's pretty complete. And again, on the feet especially, he's getting a little bit more confidence, and he's becoming a threat. But here in Alcantara, I mean, Alcantara pretty much has him beaten almost every area of this fight. The problem is with Alcantara is he going to keep his foot on the gas? Is he going to gas as far as cardio goes along the way as well? Cause he does tend to slow down in fights. He does tend to get put on his back in fights as well. And a lot of times if he can't get rid of you, he can't sub you, he's going to lose rounds that way as well. Now, I don't know if Perez has the wrestling game to actually do that to Alcantara, of course. So I'm doubting that. But that being said, I think Perez has the pace he could push as the fight goes on a little bit, after the first, especially if he could survive early on and make this fight interesting in round two and round three. So I think if it hits the scorecards, we're probably going to see a fairly competitive decision. So it could very well be a dog or pass situation. But if there's going to be a finish inside, I do believe it's Alcaterra probably finishing Perez. Alcaterra could sub him. Alcaterra could also knock him out on the feet as well. I mean, the guy is a pretty nasty finisher at times. But again, Perez is improving. And the letdowns that we've seen from Alcaterra throughout his career have been disappointing. I mean, I think the guy should actually be a perennial title contender. I mean, if he can't wear that strap, he should be right in the mix almost all the time. That's how good of a fighter this guy could be. But it's just, I mean, some of his flukes, or I shouldn't say flukes, but some of his losses, like the Kelleher choke that he got submitted with last time. I mean, Kelleher obviously is a very good submission artist, but, you know, you wouldn't expect him to actually catch a guy like Alcaterra, and he did. You know, the fights, I guess, that he lost before that wasn't bad because he was fighting a very game Jimmy Rivera, which obviously Jimmy Rivera is in the title mix right now as well. But I mean, the Sainz decision for him that was lost was lackluster, and it was just kind of a surprise at that time as well. So he just has some of those lackluster performances that just makes you scratch your head and question him a little bit. So I think that's what's going on here. As far as a pick goes, I still have to kind of side with him because I know he is purely better than Perez right now, but do I have confidence in him as far as the betting window goes and laying that chalk on him? No, I would not do that. So I would stay away from it as a bet. But as far as a pure pick goes, I still have to lean Alcaterra's way. I mean, if Perez does get this win, I'll be a little bit surprised, and it'll be a great scalp on his resume. But I mean, to me, he's going to have to get it first before I really have confidence in him moving forward. So I'll pick Alcaterra for now and see how it plays out.
And I can completely understand the Alcantara pick. I mean, he is by far the more experienced fighter. He's got more power. I think he has a slightly more dangerous submission game. The problem, though, is, you know, he can be so inconsistent. I mean, Yuri Alcantara is a guy that has some incredible wins in his career. I mean, even dating back to when he knocked out Ricardo Lamas back in the day, I believe, in the WEC. So, I mean, this guy clearly is capable of pulling off impressive finishes and beating solid fighters, but he is so inconsistent with his performances. I mean, look at the fights recently. I mean, he gets the crap kicked out of him by Luke Sanders in the first round, like 10-8, maybe 10-7, and then pulls off a knee bar in the second round out of nowhere against one of the better up-and-coming prospects in the division. And then the next fight, he takes on a guy in Brian Kelleher and gets submitted in the first round. What? How? And then, you know, he faces Frankie Sainz and just gets out, beat up, and taken down over the course of three rounds. But then the next fight, he faces Leandro Issa, and his conditioning looks fine. I mean, he is just a mixed bag. You just don't know what you're going to get. And at 37 years old, I think Father Time has got to start catching up with this guy eventually. I mean, so far he's been pretty ageless inside the octagon, but, I mean, he's got to start looking like an old man at some point, you would think. And Alejandro Perez might have the style to make him do that. I mean, Perez obviously did not have the best, UFC debut. I mean, after winning the Ultimate Fighter, he just goes and gets destroyed by Patrick Williams. But since then, he's looked great. I mean, the Scott Jorgensen fight just tore up his legs with brutal leg kicks. He handled Ian Entwistle's knee bar game to get a first round stoppage, had a close decision against Morales. And then in his last fight, I mean, I thought he looked great against Andre Sukumtat, especially considering how badly he was getting rocked at times. And then to be able to come back from that and, you know, kind of bite down on his mouthpiece and just make it happen, despite the knockdowns. You have to give him a lot of credit. So, you know, Alejandro Perez is a guy that can push the tempo, make Alcantara work. The big concern, obviously, is his chin. And Alcantara is a very powerful striker. So if Alcantara connects with something nasty, he could put Perez out. But if Perez is able to avoid getting hit by something heavy, I think Perez has a good chance of just outworking Alcantara over the course of three rounds. I think on the feet, Perez is underrated, even though, again, the chin is questionable. And on the ground, Perez is pretty underrated. Although, again, Alcantara, he's a well-rounded, dangerous guy. But at 37 years old, this might be a turning point fight. And as long as Perez can protect his chin, I think there's a decent chance that he can outwork Alcantara enough to convince the judges to give him the decision. So my pick is going to be Perez, but I'm not that confident with it, mainly because of his chin. Now, moving on to the Fox Sports 1 preliminary card, we have Frankie Sains, who is 11-5, taking on UFC newcomer Mareb Dvalishvili, who is 7-2. Now, Nick, what's the MMA oddsmaker's perspective on this one?
Up in Mareb, minus 150, the comeback on Sains at plus 110. Right now, looking over five times, it's Mareb minus 155, the comeback on Sains plus 135. So line margins have tightened up. Basically, line staying the same as well. Nothing too crazy. This was kind of a tricky line, man. I think a lot of these people out there aren't sure which way to go here either, because Sains obviously has got a lot of respect. He's performed relatively well in his UFC career thus far, getting himself into obviously the top 15 in the rankings there at bantamweight for a while. So, I mean, Sains is not an easy out. Mareb, though, is a lot of similarities in their games. I mean, both these guys are like powerful for the bantamweight division. Both these guys have a wrestling and judo type background or whatever. They're both grinders basically with a little bit of stand-up game to go along with it. They could beat you on the feet as well. So both very well-rounded fighters with power, with speed, with intelligence, coming from good camps as well. So a lot to like and a lot of similarities between both of them. Obviously, most of us know about Sains already. So now let's get into the debuting Mareb a little bit here. I mean, like I just said, I basically explained somewhat of what he's like, but he's an aggressive, powerful bantamweight. Unorthodox striking. I mean, he does throw some crazy stuff, a lot of spins, a lot of angles that you wouldn't expect from him. And then if he lands him, obviously he's got some power to go along with it. So you could be in some trouble. And again, he does have a judo background, solid wrestling to go along with it. And he's good in scrambles. I mean, he has been put on his back in his fights, but at times he ends up, you know, finding his spot and transitioning out of that and ends up being on top. And then start to dominate the ground grappling in his fights as well. So he's that type of fighter where maybe you get him down for a second, but before you know it, he can reverse things on you or get back up to his feet. So I'm impressed with him overall. I mean, he's a high-paced fighter, but he's kind of a grinder overall. So again, a lot of similarities to Sains. I mean, Sains has pretty good boxing. His wrestling is solid, as we all know. Like I said, he's performed relatively well so far in his UFC career. So this is going to be a scrap. If it hits the scorecards, it's probably going to be a really, really competitive decision. I think Mareb edges it out a little bit. If there's going to be a finish, though, that's where I think, and part of my head thinks that there might be, because Sains obviously, I mean, I don't trust his chin that much. Now, he's a warrior. The guy's probably tougher than what I'm claiming here as far as his chin goes, but I do think that Mareb has enough power, and Sains is getting to that point where now he's 37 years old. I mean, I think he's going to hit that decline spot sooner rather than later. And of course, I mean, you know, I hate to say it, but I just don't trust that chin at all. I mean, he's coming off of a win or a loss, I should say, split decision loss to Mendez. But before that, he got knocked out by Wineland pretty bad, a pretty vicious knockout in that third round. So, you know, I don't expect his chin to get that much better. I think it's going to continue to be on the decline. So that's kind of a wild card you could throw in there, meaning that if Sains' chin doesn't hold up, obviously it could be a competitive fight. And then one punch just floors him, and you know, you just can't trust it, basically, is what I'm trying to spit out. So I think Mareb has the advantages here pretty much across the board, but it will be a competitive fight with all the similarities. So it's tough spot to bet as well. But I am going to favor Mareb here in this fight. I think he's just a little bit younger, fresher, a little bit more hungry right now, and I think he's obviously not on the decline at all, so I think he's going to probably get the job done. Tough fight to call, but I'm going to pick Mareb to win.
This can be a tough fight, but only really if Dvalishvili has issues with his takedown defense, because Dvalishvili has big-time power on the feet. He's a competent striker, and honestly, I just think he's the better fighter here at this point in time. I mean, Frankie Sains, he had his run. At one point, he was in the top 15. He got big fights against big fighters. You know, even, you know, had a competitive fight with Uriah Faber. But, I think, you know, his time has just kind of passed at this point. I mean, he's on a 3-fight losing streak now. His chin has definitely started to go. I mean, it was a crazy fight, his last one against Mendez, but, I mean, at this point, I don't know how effective his wrestling is, and his chin definitely is an issue. It wasn't before. I mean, when he made his UFC debut, he was just active on the feet. He mixed in takedowns. I mean, it was just, he had a good, solid, well-rounded game, but I just don't think that he can afford to trade with opponents anymore at this point in his career. So, against Dvalishvili, if Saints does not get quick takedowns each round and then keep him down, I think he's in for a world of hurt because, if Dvalishvili connects with anything, I think Saints could be going for a ride. And this feels like a setup fight for a talented prospect debuting against a veteran who's on a losing skid that's vulnerable to the knockout. It seems like this is almost a match made for Dvalishvili to have a big, impactful UFC debut. And I think he's going to pull that off. I expect Dvalishvili to not just win, but I think he knocks out Frankie Saints. So Dvalishvili will be my pick. Now dropping down to the flyweight division, we have Carlos John de Tomas, who is 8-1, taking on Alex Perez, who is 18-4. Now, Nick, where did you open this fight, and how has the public shifted things so far?
I opened Perez -260 to come back on De Tomas at +180. And right now, looking over five dimes, it is currently Perez -400. De Tomas is at +325. So needless to say, line did get bet up a little bit. The hype around Perez continues to increase. And I mean, deservingly so. The guy is definitely a beast. I mean, he's fun to watch fight. There's no question about that. If you look at his last fight against Gray and Dana White's Tuesday Night Contender Series, I mean, it shows you what kind of talent the guy is. Gray's not a bad fighter. And, I mean, what Perez did in running through him was incredible, really. I mean, that choke was pretty slick as well. So that's what you get from Perez. I mean, he's an aggressive young fighter, pushes forward on the feet with clean boxing, powerful technique, shows good takedown defense, his clinch game solid, good offensive jiu-jitsu. But he does have a few flaws in his game as well. And one of them is his sub defense. I mean, he's been submitted three times in his career. So that is an issue against a really good submission artist. He's got to be careful, obviously. So offensively, he can deliver it, but, can he defend it? Now, again, he's young. He's getting better. He's getting more confident. So all that will improve. And right now, I mean, he's just a force to be reckoned with. And I love, seeing him in the flyweight division at 125 pounds, obviously in the UFC right now, because I think there's a lot of good fights waiting for him. So it starts here with De Tomas. De Tomas isn't bad, man. I mean, he's obviously a pretty solid fighter. Unfortunately for him, he ended up losing his UFC debut, against a very talented up and coming hyped prospect as well. So I really fault him that bad. I mean, he was game. He didn't get finished in that fight. He lost a decision. It was a clear decision, but, you know, he ended up surviving against a very talented grappler. So he didn't really get to display what he's made of. And here I think it is going to be a fairly competitive fight. If he doesn't get run over, at least it's going to be a competitive fight, because I think there is a chance Perez just runs right through him as well. But De Tomas is actually a pretty solid fighter in his own right. I mean, he's got a little bit of everything in his game as well. He's just not dominant in any particular area. He's one of those guys. Now, his ground game is definitely his best attribute. And because he uses it more so in most of his fights as well. But he does have a little bit of striking on the feet as well that he could do some damage with. You can't count him out on the feet. And he's going to have some length here over Perez as well. I believe he's going to have at least 3 or 4 inches of pure reach. So this might end up playing out a little bit closer than we all think, but it's hard to pick against Perez right now. I mean, I do think he's a talented young gun that's coming up, and he's going to make some waves. Again, his confidence is only going to increase with another win here over De Tomas, and we'll see where he goes from there. But it should be a good fight. I do have more respect, obviously, than most people out there that bet De Tomas, but I just think stylistically it is a bad matchup. So I do agree with the action. I don't agree where the line is right now, but I do think Perez wins, so I'm going to pick him.
Personally, I don't think this fight will be close at all. It just seemed like from watching De Tomas in his UFC debut that as one of the younger fighters on the roster, he got called too soon. I mean, he was 8-0. He had a nice track record in the Philippines, but against UFC competition, I mean, and he was facing a guy that was also making his UFC debut, and he got blown out in that fight. So I just think he just wasn't ready. And if that fight made it seem like he wasn't ready, I think this fight will cement it. Alex Perez is an extremely competent fighter, well-rounded. This guy is solid on the feet with heavy knees. He mixes up his attack very well. I mean, he's an exciting fighter. And then on the ground, I mean, he is extremely opportunistic with submissions. I mean, he jumped on that anaconda, turned it into a Darce choke. It was a beautiful submission against Gray, and Gray was a very talented fighter. I mean, that guy had a decision victory over Eric Shelton in the past couple years. So, I mean, they were both competing for an opportunity to fight in the UFC, and Perez just blew him out. So I think Alex Perez is a guy that is already UFC caliber, like, and he can be competitive against several fighters, even in the middle of the bantamweight division at this point. Being 25 years old and already having fought 22 times professionally is crazy. But Perez is experienced, young, talented, and I think he has a very bright future. And I think that this is going to be an absolute butt kicking. I don't think Carl John de Tomas has even the slightest chance in this fight. I think Perez whoops him on the feet and whoops him on the ground. And de Tomas's strength is on the ground. And I don't think even at his absolute best ability, Perez should be able to beat him there too. So I don't think this fight will be close. I think Perez takes him out in the first round. Now moving up to the bantamweight division, we have Luke Sanders, who is 11-1, taking on Andre Sukumtat, who is 11-5. Now, Nick, what's the MMA oddsmaker's perspective on this one?
Up at Sanders -280, Sukumtat +200. Right now, looking over five dimes, Sanders -230. The comeback on Sukumtat at +190. So line margins have tightened up a little bit. A little bit more action coming on the underdog. I mean, that's, I guess, a whole lot of support right now on Sanders, but that'll change, and I'm sure there's some parlay actions going to come in his way as well. This is going to be a good fight. I mean, both these guys, I think, are very solid bantamweights. I'm glad they're both, you know, in the UFC and on the roster here because they deserve it. I know that Sukumtat has had some tough fights, I mean, along the way so far. It's unfortunate for him because his last fight against Perez, it was a nail-biter. I mean, it could have went either way. His fight before that against Morales could have went either way as well. So, you know, I mean, he could be 2-0 instead of 0-2 in the UFC right now. And he is a very good, capable fighter. I mean, another guy that has a little bit of everything. Of course, he comes from a good camp. He actually has a great stand-up game, underrated on the feet. I mean, he's got some technical clean striking with a lot of power. He's got overall pretty decent takedown defense. He can utilize that takedown defense and get top position at times as well. He's got a very savvy ground game to go along with it. Ground awareness is solid. So, I mean, it's hard to knock this guy out. It's hard to submit this guy. And on the feet, he brings it. He's got decent takedown defense, and he usually can, I mean, you know, hang in there with some really solid competition and do well. So like I said, I think he's not an easy out at all, but unfortunately for him, I do think he's going to run into problems with Sanders' game. I mean, I think Sanders is a tremendous fighter. I know he got beat and kind of, I mean, surprisingly in a way with that leg lock that he got submitted by Alcantara because he was on his way to winning that fight. I mean, he was looking great in that fight. So that's why I'm saying surprisingly, because I wasn't expecting him to get sucked into that knee bar so deep. But he did, and credit Alcantara for getting the job done. But outside of that, I mean, man, I'll tell you what, Sanders has a lot of potential. I mean, he's the type of fighter that obviously he's got a lot of speed. He's a powerful guy for the bantamweight division. He's got great wrestling, just a grinder overall, even on the feet. I mean, I think in this matchup, it's going to be tougher on the feet for him than anywhere else. So he's probably going to want to utilize the rest of his MMA game in this fight. But even on the feet, he can be okay and he can hang in there and score and have success on the feet against most opponents. But again, I mean, Sukumtat, this is what the guy's going to do. He's going to look to stand and bang, keep the fight upright. So Sanders is going to have to use his a more well-versed game, I think, overall, and just more dominant game, especially on the ground, to pull this off. So I think he does do it. I think that it's going to be, if it hits the scorecards, probably is a little bit competitive, of course, but I think Sanders just basically grinds him out enough that unfortunately for Sukumtat, he's going to suffer his third straight loss and it'll be another competitive type of fight too. So hopefully the UFC does not cut him if he loses, because I think he does deserve to be on the roster in the bantamweight division, and hopefully he gets a winnable fight his next matchup. So we'll see how it goes for him, but I think Sanders is on the rise, hopefully gets rebounds and, you know, gets on track here, because I think he can definitely make a run towards possible title shot in the bantamweight division. That's how much skill this guy has. So again, we'll see how this fight plays out, but the pick is Sanders to win.
And normally I'd call out Nick for being hyperbolic about guys that are like 1-1 in the UFC getting title shots down the line. But I mean, Luke Sanders is that talented. He's that legitimate of a prospect. I mean, this guy was supposed to be fighting Brian Caraway after losing to Yuri Alcantara. Like, that's how much they believed in him for this, to give him an opponent in the top 10 after a loss, because he shouldn't have lost that last fight. I mean, 10-7 first round. I mean, it was a massacre. And it was just so frustrating because it was a very telegraphed, leg lock that, Alcantara was going for. But I think, Sanders was just so lost in his own head, like, so thinking about trying to put Alcantara away, that he just let Alcantara set that up without hardly any resistance. And then by the time he realized what was happening, it was just too far gone. So, just a very frustrating performance because of, we know what he's capable of, and he should have got a finish in that fight, not just won it, but finished Alcantara. So this time around, I think he's going to be out for vengeance. Now, Sukumtat is not, you know, the type of guy that you just beat up on. I mean, on the feet, Sukumtat is going to be competitive and probably win the stand-up exchanges with Sanders. I mean, Sanders is well-rounded. I mean, there really is not a weakness in his game. But if there's anything, I would say, you know, he's not the most dangerous striker. But Sukumtat, I mean, that guy has some power. You saw it in his last fight, the performance against Perez, when he just repeatedly dropped him. I think it's the most knockdowns ever in a fight where they lost. So that is pretty surprising. And so I would say on the feet, Sukumtat has a decent chance to pull this out, but will it stay on the feet? I don't think so. I mean, Luke Sanders is very dangerous on the ground. He has great wrestling, an elite ground game, excellent ground and pound. Why play with fire by standing and banging with this guy? So if I'm Luke Sanders, I mean, I stand just long enough to get Sukumtat to drop his guard a little bit, and then bam, you shoot in for a takedown, put him on his back, and then just go to work. I think Sanders has the ability to get a finish on the ground, but more often than not, I think that he just rides this one out from top position, staying active enough to stay in top position and not get stood up. And I think that he wins decision. So my pick is going to be Luke Sanders. Now moving on to the main event of the preliminary card, we have a rematch in the women's bantamweight division as Alexis Davis, who is 18-7, takes on Liz Carmouche, who is 10-5. Now, Nick, where did you open this fight, and how has the public shifted things so far?
I put Carmouche -140 to come back on Davis, even money. Right now, looking over five times, it is Carmouche -185. The comeback on Davis is +160. So more action coming in Carmouche's way. I am a little surprised. I mean, Davis won the first matchup, even though Carmouche was, you know, a little favorite coming into that fight as well. Pretty much where it is now. I believe she was around 190, just under 2-1 or so, in her last fight. So the line is basically back up to where it was, their first meeting, which Davis actually won. So, yeah, wasn't sure which way the actual betting would go here, but I figured it is going to be a competitive fight, and it will be. I mean, I think it'll be back and forth. I actually favor Carmouche in this fight as well this time. And last time I did bet on Davis, I picked her in better. So I'm going to jump ship this time. I just think out of the two, I mean, I really believe that Davis, I mean, obviously she, after her disappointing loss to Rousey, she took some time off. And then, you know, I believe had a kid along the way as well. And, you know, she's had some personal stuff. She hasn't been fighting as consistent, of course. And to me, she looks worse. I mean, I don't know what it is, but, you know, I know she bounced back from the Rousey loss and ended up beating Kaufman. And, you know, along the way, she did suffer a pretty bad beat to McMahon. And then, of course, in her last fight, got a win over Dandois. So she's, you know, she's okay, but I just think that she's not what she was kind of making her title run. At least so far, I don't think she's as sharp. I don't think across the board she's as good as what she was leading up to that title shot with Ronda Rousey, because she had a lot of momentum on her side. You could see the improvements in her game. She had confidence. She had a little bit of everything. Well, now, even though Carmouche is not the most active fighter either, I actually think Carmouche has gotten better since their first fight. I think Carmouche, you know, obviously she suffered a tough loss to Miesha Tate after that, but I mean, her win over Murphy was close, competitive, controversial somewhat. But then she backs it up with a win over Chookagian. So to me, I did see improvements though in both of those fights. I mean, both very competitive, both close fights, but I think that Carmouche is going to take a lot away from that fight. I think if Davis did decline, like I have a feeling she did a little bit, I think that Carmouche is going to make up ground on her, and I think she's going to probably end up getting the decision win here over a fighter like a solid fighter like Davis and kind of getting her revenge. So it's going to be close. I mean, technically speaking, Davis is definitely the better fighter. She's got the jiu-jitsu edge. She obviously has a little bit more technical stand-up skill as well. Carmouche is developing her stand-up. She is getting better. Obviously, she's known for her wrestling and her grinding style as well. She's got a jiu-jitsu game to go along with it. So I just think it's going to be close. It's going to be closer than last time, but I do think Carmouche edges it out this time. So I do agree with the early action coming in her way, even though I was a little surprised it went that way. So close fight where it is now. Would I lay it? No way. I mean, I should mention that too. I'm not going to lay 2-1, close to 2-1 on this fight. This should be a very, very competitive fight. I think that you guys are thinking about betting Carmouche here. Stay away from it. It's a dog or pass situation now. I think when it was closer to pick with a slight lean toward Carmouche, I understand that, but laying 2-1, not worth it. So stay away from it, or bet Davis actually where the line is now. But as far as the pure pick goes, I do think the Carmouche does get the revenge and comes away with a close, close, hard fought battle here.
And I disagree. I mean, the last time they fought, Davis just put on a striking clinic against Carmouche. She landed good kicks. I mean, she just kept a jab pumped in Carmouche's face and bloodied up her nose real bad. I mean, I thought Carmouche was a lot better than that, but I mean, she got really exposed in that fight. Now I know Carmouche has gotten better since then, and that it's been a while. A lot has happened for both fighters, and this is even at a new weight class. But I mean, still, in terms of technical skill, I think it's very similar matchup. Carmouche needs takedowns and top position, and Davis can either go for submissions on the ground, or she can piece her up on the feet again. And again, Davis isn't an elite technical kickboxer, but she just has better striking skill than Carmouche, who is a bit inactive at times, and when she is active, isn't very technical. She kind of has big looping strikes, and when you have the big looping strikes, somebody that can just throw a jab straight down the middle is just going to consistently land on you and do damage, and that's what happened last time. And I'll agree with Nick that Davis hasn't looked as good since she came back from her pregnancy. Obviously, the Sarah McMahon fight was very poor performance. And against Dandois, she should have fought better than that. I mean, Dandois is one of the worst striking of any women fighter I've ever seen. And Davis, you know, kept it on the feet for the most part and outpointed her. But I mean, she could have knocked her out, I think. I think she could have been more aggressive. And there were definitely moments where she could have done more. So I'm a little concerned about that. And with Carmouche, yeah, her striking has improved, but I mean, the Lauren Murphy fight, she should have lost that. That was not a good performance at all. I thought Carmouche looked terrible, to be honest. And, she should have lost that decision. And then she won the Chookagian decision by getting takedowns. So this one, this fight will boil down to me, Carmouche getting takedowns, because I don't see her out striking Davis. And maybe Davis doesn't pull off an armbar or anything if she does get taken down. So that's really the only way Carmouche wins. So I don't understand the betting at all, honestly. And the other thing, that the factor that we really haven't discussed, is this is the both women's first drop down to 125 pounds. How are they going to perform? I know Carmouche used to cut a decent amount of weight, I thought, to make 125. I mean, they both fought for the belt at 135. So, and as far as I know, I don't think I've ever seen them fighting at 125 before. So this will be interesting. I think, Davis's skills should translate well, but I mean, Carmouche is going to be a lot more powerful at 125, I would think, than at 135. So we'll see how they perform, but I think, you know, this could just be history repeating itself with Davis landing jabs repeatedly in Carmouche's face, busting up her nose and winning a decision. So my pick is going to be Davis, but I'm very interested to see how both of these ladies perform at flyweight. Now, kicking off the main card on Fox Sports 1, we have a bantamweight contest between Albert Morales, who is 7-2-1, and Benito Lopez, who is 8-0. Now, Nick, what's the MMA oddsmaker's perspective on this one?
I put Lopez minus 140, the comeback of Morales even money right now, looking over five dimes. It's actually minus 110 each way. So exactly a pick 'em fight, which I think is okay. So early action came in on Morales. Now we're starting to see some action back on Lopez, and the sportsbooks are kind of sitting right there to pick 'em. it's a tough fight to call. I mean, Lopez is obviously the young gun. He's 23 years old. Morales is 26, so it's not like exactly he's an old man or anything. But that being said, I mean, it's the hype on Lopez right now that we're going to focus on it first, because he's a talented young prospect. He's got a complete skill set, training at Team Alpha Male. So he's, you know, got things going for him. I mean, he's in the right place, right time for, I think, his career. Obviously, if you're going to be in the lighter weight classes, Team Alpha Male is one of the best places you can get. And he was on Dana White Tuesday Night Contender Series already as well. And that's how he made it to this card, because he had a very impressive win over Steven Peterson. I mean, Peterson, they call him Ocho. He's a very savvy veteran of the sport. He should be actually be in the UFC right now as well, I believe. I mean, he's talented enough to do so. So for Lopez picking him off and getting the win, even though it was close, it was a split decision type of fight. Really. And in fact, it was scored a split decision, but that's exactly what it was. In fact, a lot of people could have scored it for Ocho. So Lopez is fortunate it did go his way. Not that he didn't deserve it, but again, I think that he could have realistically won either way. So Lopez is one of those guys that, I mean, he's got skills in all areas. I think his best attribute to me a little bit is actually his stand-up game. I mean, he's got pretty good wrestling and grappling to go along with it, but I think from what I've seen in his game so far, even though he is a complete fighter, I like what I see from him on the feet more than anything else. So again, that'll change as his basically career progresses and his skill set develops a little bit. But overall, I mean, he's definitely a fun guy to watch on the feet. He's got effective boxing. His kicks are on point as well. And he's got a really nice knee attack. So again, I think that is his best attribute against Morales. Morales is a tough out for him, man. I'll tell you what. And I know that he hasn't had exactly the best UFC career right now. I mean, to date, because he's been one of those guys that have suffered some very tough defeats. I mean, very close competitive decisions for Morales as well. And then, of course, he just got destroyed by Almeida in his career as well. But he, you know, coming off of a unanimous decision loss to Brett Johns, now we're seeing what Johns is capable of. It's not necessarily a bad loss to him. But again, those split decisions that he had, he got a win over Sukhman Todd, actually, and that majority decision loss he had to Perez is what I'm referring to. Very close fights over very solid competitors. So he's in there hanging with good fighters, and I think he's only getting better. You could see his confidence growing. You could see his cardio and conditioning getting a little bit better as well, because that's one attribute that I think, one flaw that he's got in his game. Morales does tend to get tired as the fight progresses a little bit, slows down, starts making more mistakes, and that leads to, you know, him getting in these spots where he's losing these close decisions or in a really close firefight. So I think Morales, his experience here, though, over Lopez is going to actually help him, because he's been in there with such good fighters that I think he's going to be able to really not be thrown off by anything. I mean, Lopez is a very talented striker, as I said, but I think Morales is going to be able to kind of go with the flow and strike with him a little bit and then kind of grind him out. I think Morales is going to be the one pressuring him up against the cage. He's going to be the one getting some takedowns along the way. Lopez is pretty tough to keep down, so his takedown defense is solid, but he can get put on his back. But usually Lopez bounces up pretty quick. So why I'm saying all that is I think this is a path for Morales to win, because even if it's a quick takedown, if it's a close competitive fight on the feet and Morales just gets a quick takedown, that could swing around for him. So I do believe that Morales – it's just going to be a little bit too much maybe for Lopez making his UFC debut here. And, you know, it's just a spot right now where I think Lopez still needs a little bit more work. Maybe they could have given him a little bit of an easier opponent in his UFC debut to get him kind of more confidence and on track, because I think Morales is a very tough out. So tough fight. I'm going to actually side with the underdog. Well, I mean, I guess it's pick him now, so he's not really an underdog, but I'm going to side with Morales. I do think the early action of Morales was right, and I wouldn't be surprised if we see the action go back towards Lopez here as the hype kind of gets closer to fight time. I'm sure we'll see some of the public kind of coming in his way as well. So we could see Morales back at plus money anytime. So we'll see how it goes. I think, again, it is going to be a competitive fight, but I'm going to pick Morales to get the W here.
And I'm actually going to agree. Now, Albert Morales is a guy that I wouldn't say he's very technical, but he's aggressive and he swings for the fences, and that impresses judges. I mean, this guy tries to knock your block off, and that's always entertaining. Now, Benito Lopez, as Nick mentioned, does come from an excellent training environment in Team Alpha Male, but he's kind of been an unheralded up-and-comer. You know, we haven't heard a lot about him until we saw him on Dana White's Tuesday Night Contender Series, and as Nick mentioned, that was a very close fight against Peterson. It could have gone either way. Lopez is talented, but, I mean, he's clearly a little raw yet. I mean, he's capable on the feet. He's capable on the ground, but I mean, I don't think he's elite anywhere. I don't think his takedown defense is elite. I think You know, Morales, if he wants to, he could take this fight to the floor. He's not a great wrestler, but he has pulled off a few takedowns so far in his UFC run. And Morales, I mean, if he really wants to win this fight, just mix things up. I mean, this guy is a talented bantamweight with power in his hands and confidence, a lot of confidence in himself. And I will not be shocked one bit if Morales wins the first round. I mean, I expect him to win the first round. Where things get interesting is as Morales starts to slow down a little bit. You know, most bantamweights can go 15 minutes, no problem, but Morales usually pushes such a high tempo that he can slow down as the fight wears on. So for me, it's just, when will Lopez have a chance to take over? Does he do it in round two? Does he do it in round three? And if he does it in round two, Lopez has a good shot at winning a decision, maybe even getting a late stoppage. If he does it in round three, Morales is probably winning a decision. So it really all boils down to when Morales' pace starts to slow down. And I think Morales can at least keep this up for two rounds and win a decision. I mean, if he connects with his heavy hands, he might even just put Lopez out. I mean, that wouldn't put that out of the realm of possibility. I think Lopez is a talented young up-and-comer, but he might be biting off a little bit more than he can chew. And against somebody like Morales, who has a judge-friendly style, I think Lopez isn't quite dominant in any area enough that he could convincingly steal rounds. So I think Morales has a good chance of winning a decision here, so he's going to be my pick. Now moving up to the middleweight division, in a battle of undefeated prospects, we have Eric Anders, who is 9-0, taking on Marcus Perez, who is also 9-0. Now Nick, where did you open this fight, and how has the public shifted things so far?
I open Anders -315, the comeback and Perez at +235. Right now looking for five dimes, it's Anders -280, the comeback and Perez at +240. So solid favorite, two-way action coming into this fight. Both of these guys I do have a lot of respect. And again, I'm glad they're on, you know, this roster slot here in the UFC. Anders, of course, had a very impressive UFC debut win over Natal. I mean, I'm not surprised, honestly. Anders is that good of a fighter, of course, but he's fighting another solid fighter making his UFC debut in Perez. So Perez coming in on short notice, though, but he's the type of guy that really usually does have pretty decent conditioning. So I don't think the cardio is going to be a big issue here, and it should be a pretty fun fight the way these guys match up. Now, of course, getting into Perez's background a little bit, he's a good young fighter. He just actually won the LFA middleweight title over an undefeated hyped prospect by submission, a very slick submission as well. So he's that type of fighter that, I mean, he can, you know, he was the underdog going in that fight and he came through. So I think that opened up some eyes, especially with his ground game. I mean, he's got really slick offensive grappling. Now, I should mention, though, he has suffered defeats in the grappling realm as well. On Ultimate Fighter 3 Brazil, he ended up getting submitted on that show, actually. But again, to another jiu-jitsu practitioner that just basically got positioned and subbed him. But outside of that, Perez is actually a really talented fighter. I mean, on the feet, he's not bad. He's got some finishing ability on the feet as well. But where it's at with him is definitely his ground game. I mean, I'm impressed. He's got some underrated wrestling. And then once he's on the ground, I mean, he's aggressive. He looks to finish you on with either ground and pound or, you know, to submit you as well. So the guy has what it takes to be in the UFC and probably win, you know, fights along the way for sure. I just don't think he's going to get it done, though, unfortunately for him, against Anders. Anders is stylistically, I think, just a tough matchup for him. Again, it'll be a fun fight, but from what Anders has shown so far, I mean, Anders is the, you know, obviously former football player, collegiate football player that is just an athlete. He's a beast, man. I mean, the guy's picking up the MMA game really fast, and I mean, he's having a lot of success. I mean, he made his official UFC debut over a very solid middleweight in Natal, which is basically, you know, kind of, I don't want to say towards the top of the middleweight division, but you know, he's always one of those guys that gets, he's a very solid gatekeeper, let's put it that way. If you beat Natal, you're doing some good things in the middleweight division. So Anders was more than impressive in that UFC debut, able to finish Natal like he did, and I think it's just going to continue here. I think Anders, to me, he's opened up my eyes a little bit, because again, for him, before he made his UFC debut and defeated Natal, actually, he fought a very solid fighter in LFA as well, in Brandon Allen. Allen has a complete skill set in his own right. He's got a very good ground game. And again, Anders opened my eyes there as well, because he was able to fend off some, you know, dangerous spots along the way. And he showed me that he can go five strong rounds, and he showed me that he can, again, survive against a jiu-jitsu specialist. So I think a lot of signs are pointing to Anders being able to survive this fight as well. I mean, he's kind of, has some experience leading into this that got him prepared to be where he's at here. And from what I've seen so far, I don't think he's going to take a step back. I think he's going to continue to improve. He's a confident fighter. He's a powerful fighter. And I think what's going to happen here is he's going to have the ability to keep it upright. And upright, he's going to end up winning this fight because I think he's going to outstrike Perez as it goes. He might even get top position. I don't know if he wants to tangle too much on the ground with Perez here. But if he does, I think Anders is going to be okay anyway because from what I've seen so far in his ground game, the guy has really solid ground awareness. And I think that he's going to be okay no matter what position he gets in here. So I think it's going to be hard for Perez to finish Anders. And if he doesn't finish him, I think Anders is going to either win on the scorecards or possibly finish Perez along the way as well. So much respect to both guys, but I just think, in my opinion, Anders is the better fighter and he should get the nod here. So I'm going to pick him to win. And right now where it's at, under 3-1 might be some value on Anders. I mean, I know it's crazy to kind of say that, especially with how much respect I just gave Perez, but stylistically, I do think that Anders wins this fight. So it is what it is. I'm going to pick Anders to win.
I don't think this fight will be that close. Marcus Perez has talent on the ground. He clearly has a dangerous submission game and he knows what he's doing on the feet, but Eric Anders is an elite athlete. I mean, he's going to have a good size advantage in this fight. I mean, Marcus Perez, before he won that LFA title, I mean, he had competitive fights against Ildemar Alcantara and Paulo Thiago in Brazil. And the Thiago fight even was a 5-round decision. So, I mean, I think Perez is talented, but I mean, he's clearly not like some surging up and coming force in the heavyweight division, in my opinion. I think, Eric Anders, on the other hand, I mean, UFC debut and he absolutely obliterated Rafael Nadal. I mean, forced him into retirement. I mean, that is insane how good of a performance he had against him. He basically had a great game plan in that fight. He was waiting for Nadal to switch to southpaw where he felt that he was more vulnerable. And then he just exploded with heavy strikes on him and ended up putting him out cold. So against Perez, I think Anders is going to be the bigger fighter, the more powerful striker. And if it goes to the ground, I think Anders will probably be in top position. Obviously, he'll have to watch out for submission attempts from bottom. But Anders, I mean, his bread and butter sometimes is ground and pound from top position with his heavy hands. I mean, this guy, as I mentioned, an elite athlete. I mean, he was on the national championship Alabama football team in, I think, 2009 that beat Texas. So, I mean, clearly this guy is a cut above the typical UFC caliber fighter in terms of the things that he might be able to pull off inside the octagon. I think just with his power, his size, and his strength, I think it's just going to be too much for Perez, especially because Perez is stepping in on short notice. LFA champion or not, I think that's going to be a tough task for him to prepare for this bout. And I know Perez pulled off a huge upset in his last fight to win that title against a talented fighter, but I don't think he pulls off the upset back in back-to-back performances. I think Anders doesn't just win. He probably gets a knockout at some point. So my pick is going to be Anders. Now, dropping down to the lightweight division, we have Scott Holtzman, who is 10-2, taking on Daryl Horter, who is 13-2. Now, Nick, what's the MMA oddsmaker's perspective on this one?
I've been Horter -135, the comeback on Holtzman at -105. Right now, looking for 5 dimes, Holtzman -120, the comeback on Horter, even money. So line flipped a little bit, but it is, again, a pick 'em fight. So there is 2 action coming in this fight as well. But early on, it definitely went a little bit more towards Holtzman. So another tough one, man. I mean, both these guys are definitely talented lightweights that are kind of looking to find a spot, you know, where they belong in the mix of things in the UFC lightweight division. Because that is obviously, we all know, it's a shark tank. I mean, it's crazy. The talent that's, you know, in that lightweight division and well-rounded fighters, a lot of wrestlers in there as well. And just a shark tank, like I said. So both these guys, a win here will get them a long way and it'll kind of keep them relevant and moving up the ladder a little bit. And it is going to be a competitive fight. I think that what I like on the feet with Horcher is his ability to kind of land a little bit cleaner. He is a southpaw. He does have a little bit more pure knockout power, I think, as well. But it does bother me that he's not as active as you'd like to see at times either. He's not, he needs to put his foot on the gas a little bit more. Now, Horcher also does have a pretty solid wrestling game. Of course, you know, depending on who he's facing, I mean, we saw him in his UFC debut. I mean, that was against Nurmagomedov, of course, but he got out wrestled there and ultimately beat. And he took that fight on short notice. But in most cases, I should say, Horcher out wrestles his opponents, depending on, you know, the situation. Now, Holtzman, it's going to be tough here for that angle as well, because Holtzman doesn't have bad wrestling, even though he's been put on his back a few times throughout his UFC career thus far as well. But he does have pretty solid wrestling, better than what he showed so far. Again, it's just the matchups that he's been in and some of the tough situations that he's been in as well. I mean, he's faced Emmett, got out wrestled by Emmett, got out wrestled by Dober a little bit as well. So what I'm thinking here is the wrestling is actually going to neutralize each other out. I'm sure both guys end up in top position along the way here as well. And on the feet, we're going to see a barn burner. I think it's going to be close. It'll be back and forth. I think Holtzman's going to be more aggressive on the feet. He'll be pushing the higher pace. He'll be probably controlling this fight up against the cage at times as well. So it's going to be close. I think that, I mean, both these guys are going to be competitive on the feet, on the ground, everywhere. So a pick'em fight is about right here as well. And I do think the early action that came in on Holtzman was probably a little bit more accurate here. Again, I mean, it can't be confident, because I think both these guys are so evenly matched that it's going to come down to the wire. And, you know, you never know. It could go either way. But I do lean a little bit more towards Holtzman. And it is because I think he's going to push a higher pace. And I think, you know, right now where he's at, I just think he's just barely above Horcher, and I think he's going to get the nod. So tough fight, tough bet. Everything about this fight should be close and competitive and not easy to call. But I'm going to lean a little bit more Holtzman's way.
This should be a competitive fight. Holtzman is an aggressive striker, and it looks like his stand-up is improving every time we see him. His last fight against McBride, I thought his stand-up looked as good as it's ever looked. I mean, he was aggressive, powerful, landing good combinations, and I mean, he clearly won a one-sided decision. Now, Horcher, on the other hand, he's a bit more of a counter striker. He's the kind of guy that'll take the center of the cage and kind of press the action without throwing a strike, and he just kind of waiting to respond. He kind of forces a response and then throws his counter shots. Horcher also has a decent wrestling game where he can get top position and do some damage there as well. And that's honestly the biggest concern here, because on the feet, Holtzman is going to be by far the more aggressive, active striker. I mean, he lands more than twice at the rate of Horcher. So I expect Holtzman to win a decision if it just stays standing, unless Horcher lands just some brutal counter strikes, which is possible because Holtzman's so aggressive, he does leave openings. So, but my big concern is if it goes to the ground. Holtzman has been taken down repeatedly in fights. When he lost his two UFC fights, it's primarily been because he was put on his back. And if Horcher really wants to win this fight, I would expect him to get takedowns in top position. Now, once Holtzman does get taken down, it's not just a walk in the park for his opponent. I mean, he is an extremely active scrambler. He forces fun exchanges on the canvas. He knows what he's doing on the ground. He just doesn't have the best takedown defense. So what I would expect to happen here is Horcher gets takedowns, and then Holtzman forces scrambles, tries to get back to his feet. And if he does, I think Holtzman will get right back to work with his active striking game. And then Horcher will be looking for counters, but probably eating too many shots in the meantime, trying to find that perfect counter. I mean, if he lands the perfect counter, he could knock Holtzman out. It's absolutely possible. Horcher does have a lot of power, but I think Holtzman just does a little bit too much in this fight. He's going to be too active for Horcher, and I expect Holtzman walks away with a decision. So Holtzman's going to be my pick. Now, dropping down to the bantamweight division, we have a battle of top 10 prospects in Marlon Moraes, who is 19-5-1. And Aljamain Sterling, who is 14-2. Now, Nick, what's the MMA oddsmaker's perspective on this one?
I open Moraes at -175. The comeback on Sterling at +135. Right now, looking over five times, it is -140, +120. And that line drop just recently happened as well. So it was kind of hovering about where it opened, and line margins have tightened up a little bit. And it's going to, I think, stay around that realm as well, depending maybe by fight day we could see this drop to exactly pick him. Sterling might actually flip to the slight favorite, or we could see Moraes bounce back up to closer to 200. I mean, it's going to be interesting to see where the heavy, sharp action comes in either way on this fight along the way. I'm sure there's going to be sharp action on both sides of this actually as we go, and a lot of heavy bets as well. Now, as far as why Moraes is entering the favorite here, and in a way. I mean, I think some people are probably like, wow, he's coming in, you know, a couple weeks ago, he just fought and now he's coming back and he's actually favored. There's a lot of hype around Moraes, man. I mean, the guy has been known as one of the best bantamweights in the world, even before he made his UFC debut, even when he was on the roster of World Series of Fighting. I mean, this guy is a talented fighter. Definitely a special guy to watch fight on the feet. I mean, he's just a technician. He's got speed. He's got power. It's fun to watch him fight. A thing of beauty, really. Now, of course, he's got decent takedown defense overall. In most cases, again, depending on, you know, who he's matched up with, if he's matched up with a grinder or like Dotson was able to get him down a couple times or whatnot. I mean, he's going to have that from time to time, but overall he's got pretty decent takedown defense. He's got the ability to scramble back up on the feet and he also has jiu-jitsu to go along with it. So he's not out of the realm at all with his jiu-jitsu game on the ground. But that being said, stand up is where it's at with him. So he's going to want to keep this fight upright against Sterling and try to basically pick him apart, whether it's leg kicks, whether it's his, you know, clean technique, striking, his boxing, anything it goes. I mean, he's going to try to pick Sterling apart here. And it's possible because if there's a flaw to Sterling's game right now, I mean, Sterling is definitely one of the best bantamweights in the world. Got a ton of respect for the guy. You could tell how much better he's getting fight by fight. And he's been in there with some of the best in the world already. So, I mean, really sky's the limit for a guy like Sterling. And I think he's going to continue to improve. But if there's a weakness in his game, it's a little bit unorthodox and it's effective at times, but Sterling can still get picked apart on the feet and get beat up on the feet a little bit, especially against a sniper like Moraes. So Sterling is going to have to close the distance, even though he's going to have a reach advantage in this fight. If he can't control the distance and be in the right spot where he can do a little bit of damage, he's going to have to close that distance, get this fight to the ground or just try to pin Moraes up against the cage. Just make this an ugly, slow paced, boring fight and try to even possibly submit Moraes on the ground because his ground is where it's going to be at for him as far as advantages go over Moraes. So should be a very competitive fight. I mean, like I said, to me, Sterling coming off arguably the best win he's ever had. I mean, he beat the former champion of Brow, which is saying something. You know, that's, I know Brow is kind of on a decline, of course, but the confidence should be at an all-time high for Sterling as well coming into this fight. So it should be intriguing, should be interesting. This is a tough one. I've been going back and forth on this fight as well because, again, I think if Moraes does have success and is able to keep it on the feet, I think he's going to outpoint or pick apart Sterling along the way. But part of me does think that Sterling's going to make this an ugly fight and he's going to be able to control it. He's going to be able to kind of slow everything down and he's going to make this fight an ugly fight for Moraes too. So I've been kind of going back and forth and this is another situation where my final selection, my final pick will be given out on MMAoddsbreaker.com, our staff picks for the event. So make sure you go to the website on fight day and check out our final selections from our whole staff that's kind of participating in that as well, not just mine or Brian's. So check that out. That'll be my final selection. But right now I'm going to lean a little bit more towards Moraes. We'll see the weigh-ins to see if I change my mind before that, because it is one of those fights, like I said. But I think the majority of the people out there, seem to be, you know, split on this fight as well. And I think it's going to continue to be that way. So great fight, a big fight for the bantamweight division. The winner is going to take huge strides. I know Moraes is getting back in there because, man, he wants a shot at that title. He wants to get himself the the number one contender status. So that's why, you know, he's getting back in there against another elite, a fighter in the bantamweight division. So I can respect that, but it might be a little bit too much too soon. But for right now, I do slightly lean his way, so I'm going to pick him to win.
Now, if this fight stays standing, then yes, Marlon Moraes has a very good chance to win, but why would Aljamain Sterling stand and trade with one of the more dangerous strikers in the division? I know Sterling's stand-up is getting better. I mean, it's still not that good in my opinion, but I mean, he has definitely made some strides in that department. I mean, it's not an embarrassment on the feet. He can beat some fighters on the feet for sure, but I don't think he could beat Marlon Moraes on the feet. Marlon Moraes has one of the best kicking games in the bantamweight division of any fighter. And he's just a competent technical striker. So Aljamain Sterling should just go to his bread and butter here. I mean, he comes from a wrestling background. He trained at a gym with elite wrestlers in the Cerro Longo camp. He's made his money, by utilizing his wrestling and smashing guys on the ground. So if I'm Aljamain Sterling, I stand with Marlon Moraes just long enough to find an opening for a takedown. Now obviously Marlon Moraes has pretty good takedown defense, but I mean, I don't think that it's like unstoppable. I mean, he did get taken down a couple times by John Dodson, and I would expect Aljamain Sterling to be a bigger, stronger, better wrestler than John Dodson. Maybe not quite the same explosiveness and speed, but, if he can just close the distance, I think he could even just drag Marlon Moraes down if he can just get his, hands clasped together in a clinch. So, you know, Aljamain Sterling is a spectacular ground fighter. I mean, elite, top position, Very strong base. I mean, if he can take away Marlon Moraes' striking game by putting him on his back, I mean, it's not even going to be a close fight, I don't think. Now, Marlon Moraes is going to have something to say about that, and he's going to try to do as much damage as possible on the feet in the meantime. But to me, Aljamain Sterling should be able to get this fight to the floor, and once he does, I think that he has an easy path to victory, whether it's decision or probably submission. I don't see Sterling TKOing Moraes or anything. I don't really think he has that much power yet. And still, that's something that's still developing with his game. But if Sterling can wrap something up, it's possible he could pull off a submission if he can get Moraes on his back and get to a dominant position. So my pick is going to be Sterling, but it's entirely 100% dependent on him getting takedowns. And if he does not get takedowns, then Moraes has a definite chance to pull this one out. Now moving on to the co-main event of the evening in the featherweight division, we have Jason Knight, who is 20-3, taking on Gabriel Benitez, who is 19-7. Now, Nick, what's the MMA oddsmaker's perspective on this one?
Up in Knight, minus 260 to come back on Benitez at plus 180. And right now, looking for five dimes, it's minus 310 for Knight, plus 255 on Benitez. So got bet up a little bit. I understand it. I mean, stylistically, this is kind of a tough matchup for Benitez as well. But, man, I'll tell you what, this should be another fight. I think that this is going to be a competitive fight, especially if it stays upright on the feet. I understand that Knight is one of those aggressive fighters in all aspects of the game. He's going to push a very high pace. But unfortunately for him, that kind of got him in some trouble in his last fight. Of course, we all saw. I mean, you know, again, it's one of those situations where I was expecting Knight to do a little bit better, but Ricardo Lamas is one of those savvy veterans that has a ton of experience, technical skill set, some power to go along with it. You can't afford to be over aggressive with a guy that's been in there with the best in the world and is at that level, like Knight did. Unfortunately, he paid for it. I mean, it was surprising. Like I said, even though we know Lamas has it in him, I mean, the way Knight was kind of surging at that point and to just kind of suffer that loss the way he did, at least, and get knocked out, because he's tough as nails. So unfortunate loss for Knight, but he's looking to rebound here and get back on track. I guess Benitez, but it's not going to be easy, especially coming off your first legit knockout loss of your career. I'm not sure where his head's going to be right now. There's a lot of question marks around Knight, but know this, he's going to come to fight. You know, he's going to want to kind of get back on the horse and get on the winning track again and just try to do what he can. And I think part of that is going to actually be fighting a little bit smarter, fighting a little bit more conservative. I think he's got a clear path to victory here if he makes his in takedowns along the way and utilizes his wrestling here and get Benitez on his back and just try to work his ground game a little bit. Now, Benitez doesn't necessarily have a weak ground game, but he can be put on his back. I think that his takedown defense is solid, but if you really want to push the issue against him, and you have that kind of game, which Knight should have enough that you should be able to get him down. Now, of course, Knight has to be cautious and worry about Benitez's sick guillotine choke, because he does have a pretty nasty choke. He gets around your neck with that technique and that grip that he has. He can put you out. But outside of that, I think Knight's going to be just fine playing the guard game with Benitez as well. Now, if he doesn't, and he's not able to control the ground enough, I think this plays out on the feet a little bit. And that's where it gets interesting, because I think both these guys can have some success on the feet. I think Benitez is actually probably a little underrated on the feet. I think he can definitely do some damage along the way as well. But I think Knight is going to be the one that's going to push a higher pace overall, and his aggression is going to be the one that sways the judges. So it's hard not to pick Knight in this fight. I think he can control the ground. He can win the fight with his aggression on the feet as well, even if it will be competitive. So I understand it. I mean, the 3-1, I think it's still fair, because like I said, it just went up a little bit. I mean, it's ballpark about a 3-1 fight. So I think it's okay where it is now. It's hard to bet though. I wouldn't lay the juice. I wouldn't lay that chalk on Knight, but it's hard to say that I would actually go in for the underdog Benitez here as well. So I think lines appropriately set. We should just kind of watch it and see how the fight plays out and see, how everything unfolds. An important fight for both men and their careers for sure. So fun fight. I'm going to pick Knight to win, as many of you guys do as well.
Yeah, this is definitely a fight that Jason Knight should win. Gabriel Benitez is talented. He's a competent striker. He pushes a decent pace, and he's capable of going out there against the average featherweight and getting a win. But I don't think Jason Knight's the average featherweight. He's clearly shown that he's extremely aggressive, active with his hands, and has an elite ground game. I mean, Chaz Skelly went for takedowns and then just stopped going for takedowns because Knight was so active on the from bottom with submissions and sweeps and tying him up. It just made it, you know, a nightmare for him. And then on the feet, Skelly was landing bombs and Knight just walked right through him and, absorbed him and then dished it back out and eventually ended up getting a stoppage victory with his stand up. Now, clearly Jason Knight had a ceiling and that ceiling was Ricardo Lamas. Ricardo Lamas was too technical, too powerful. He just waited for Knight to be overly aggressive and then just connected with some heavy strikes and really hurt Knight badly. But I mean, Knight, as tough of an SOB as that kid is, didn't go down and the ref ended up stopping the fight with him still standing from the punishment he was taking. So against Benitez, you know, I think Benitez is talented, but he's no Ricardo Lamas. He doesn't have Lamas's technical striking skill. He doesn't have Lamas's power. He doesn't have Lamas's wrestling. So if Knight wants to win, he could take this fight to the floor. I think he could submit Benitez easily, but knowing Knight, this guy just loves to stand and bang. I would expect that this fight's going to be a back and forth slugfest on the feet. And I know that Knight got himself in a little bit of trouble against Lamas, but I don't think Benitez has that level of striking. So he shouldn't have as much to worry about. He probably will be able to wade through most of Benitez's power shots and to land his own. Knight isn't the most technical striker, but I mean, he just wears his opponents down by, absorbing their shots and frustrating them and then dishing it back out. And, over time, I mean, the opponent starts to slow down and then Knight just gets stronger and stronger. And then, he usually gets a stoppage victory. So I think that's what happens here. I think it'll be competitive early as Benitez lands some good strikes, but, over time, Knight is just going to wear him out and then eventually get a TKO or maybe a submission victory. So I think Knight wins. I think it's by stoppage, but I think it'll be fun until it happens. Now, this brings us to the main event of the evening in the featherweight division. We have Cub Swanson, who is 25-7, taking on Brian Ortega, who is 12-0 with one no contest. Now, Nick, where did you open this fight, and how has the public shifted things so far?
I've been Swanson -130, the comeback on Ortega -110. Right now, looking over five dimes, it's Ortega -120, the comeback on Swanson even money. So another one of those fights that basically opened a pick'em and it just flipped, and it'll probably flip back and forth. We'll see where the line closes. I think they'll continue to get two-way heavy action on this fight. Of course, to the overall public bettors out there, I think Swanson's going to be the more intriguing bet, and we could see it play out that way, and we could see Swanson climb back up a little bit. But I don't know. This is a tough fight. I know that looking at it on paper and looking at what these guys have been through, you would think that Swanson has an edge in this fight. But, you know, as you look a little bit closer, the improvements, in my opinion, that Ortega's making is pretty impressive, and you got to take note. And I think in this fight here, where I think he's got the advantage in this fight, is obviously his ground game. But does he have the wrestling to get Swanson down and hold him down and try to work his ground game? Or will Swanson, you know, want to work and play in his guard and risk getting submitted by a guy like Ortega that's very slick on the ground as well? We'll see. It seems to me like Swanson would probably want to keep this fight upright and try to outstrike Ortega and just kind of, you know, pick them apart as they go. That seems where he has the edge. But if you look closer at Ortega's striking, I mean, between the Guida fight and his fight against Moicano last time out, what a difference it was. I mean, the improvements that he's made, the confidence, I mean, it's just been leaps and bounds. And I think he's going to continue to do that. Again, his overall wrestling, his takedown game is improving as well. He's always had great jiu-jitsu. I mean, that's only going to, you know, kind of highlight the rest of his game as well as it goes. It's not going to get any worse. It'll continue to improve probably as well. So a lot of good things to like about Ortega really overall. And I think here it's interesting because the UFC a lot of ways kind of tells you what their game plan is here. And I mean, I know Swanson's a very popular fighter and he's beloved by the UFC, by the fans and all that, but it seems to me like they've been kind of trying to feed Swanson to another up and coming young talent. I mean, if you look at him recently, I mean, in his last fight, Lobov, I don't think Lobov's going to be, even though you got to respect Lobov because I do respect him. I mean, the guy with almost a 500 record comes into the UFC and at least is a solid, you know, I should say participant in the featherweight division. So, you know, you got to respect Loba for that. It's not an easy out, but at the same time, I mean, I'm not talking about him. I'm talking about his fight with Choi. If you look at it, I mean, Choi was an up and coming prospect that they kind of fed the Wolves or fed Swanson to the Wolves thinking that, okay, look, Swanson could be on a decline. We got this young gun coming up in Choi. We're going to kind of get him a really solid win over, you know, a guy like Swanson on his resume. Backfired. Swanson ended up looking great in that fight, which was a classic. As we all know, most of us that watch that fight, that was one of the best fights we ever seen. So that was incredible, but backfired on him. Now it seems like a couple fights later, they're almost doing it again. Ortega's kind of the prospect. Ortega's the one that, you know, the UFC, I think, would rather see build up a little bit off of a guy like Swanson, which has a very, you know, solid resume. And he's been beloved, like I said, by the UFC fans for a long, long time. So a win for Ortega over a guy like Swanson goes a long, long way. And a win for Swanson over Ortega just keeps him, you know, relevant and keeps him rolling, another prospect that he's beaten. So I think this stylistically, this matchup, I mean, there's a lot of meaning to this. And I think Ortega has a legit shot to get the W here. He's going to match up a lot better than people think, I think, with Swanson, whether it's on the ground, whether it's standing up as well. So I'm expecting a very competitive fight with the slight edge going towards Ortega, because I think his ground game is going to make up for what he lacks in some of the other areas. And we could see a possible finish from Ortega submitting Swanson on the ground as well. So I think that's how it kind of plays out. Again, a lot of people are going to think I'm wrong here, because I'm sure there's going to be, you know, the case that you can make for Swanson. Again, what he's been in there with, you know, the level of competition he's faced and where he's at his career right now compared to Ortega. But I still say that Ortega is getting better fight by fight, and he's going to open up some eyes here, and it'll be the best win that he's gotten to date in the UFC, pulling off a victory over a guy like Swanson. So the pick is Ortega, and I think he has a legit shot at finishing this fight, like he's known for. So pick is Ortega.
And I just can't hop on that Ortega train. I mean, I understand he's undefeated and he's stopped everybody he's faced so far in the UFC. But I mean, if you actually watch him fight, it just doesn't make sense. I mean, he still is looking for a quality win so far. This would be the only real quality win on his record, unless you count Moicano. But I mean, if you go back and watch the Moicano fight, I mean, Moicano was piecing him up. I mean, he was outstriking him 109-65, and then shot in for a takedown out of nowhere for no reason in a fight he was winning and gave up his neck for a guillotine choke in the third round. I mean, all they had to do was not get finished in the third round, and Ortega loses. And Moicano, in my opinion, is not even close to Cub Swanson's level. Cub Swanson is one of the better strikers in the UFC featherweight division. He's a savvy veteran. He's been in there against top prospects before, like Du Ho Choi, and he embarrassed him. I mean, that was an amazing fight, but I mean, he clearly won that fight. So to think that, you know, Brian Ortega, a guy that has just been pulling these victories out of his rear end, I mean, to use the Brock Lesnar quote, you know, he said a horseshoe up his ass at times in fights, where he was losing to Diego Brandão, pulls off a round three submission, had a competitive fight with Clay Guida that was going either way, pulls off a third round knockout, you know, a back and forth scrap with Thiago Tavares, gets a round three knockout. And then obviously the Moicano fight, he did show improved striking in that fight. He was landing some heavy shots, but I mean, he was getting outstruck almost 2-1, pulls off a round three submission. So I just am not going to be buying into the hype here on Brian Ortega. I just don't think he's ready for this type of performance. I mean, to think where he has the advantage against Cub Swanson, and it's basically his submission game. How is he going to get the fight to the floor? When Ortega has been getting submissions, it's because people are taking him down. Diego Brandão got two takedowns against Ortega, and Ortega ended up getting a submission. Thiago Tavares had six takedowns against Ortega. Ortega ended up eventually getting top position and getting a TKO. Moicano had two takedowns against Ortega, but one of them he dove right into a guillotine choke. Ortega's only had one successful takedown in his entire UFC career, and it was in his UFC debut. So is Cub Swanson going to be shooting in for a takedown against Brian Ortega and give him the only opportunity that he could to win this fight? I don't think so. Cub Swanson, is a pretty high fight IQ guy. I mean, he's willing to brawl and engage at times, but I mean, he's not a guy that just shoots in for random takedowns out of nowhere. So, I mean, he can be taken down, and it's happened before. I mean, Frankie Edgar, you know, dominated him with takedowns in their 5-round fight, but, I don't see it. I mean, Cub Swanson has 5-round fight experience. He's been, 5 rounds, I think, or into the 5th round 3 times out of his last like 7 or 8 fights. So I think he's got the edge there. Because Ortega has never fought into the, a 5-round or main event type of fight in the UFC. So, I expect Swanson will have the cardio edge. Swanson will have a massive striking edge. And Swanson should be able to stop Ortega from taking him down. I mean, Ortega has a 16% takedown accuracy so far. So I don't think that it even makes sense that Ortega should be the favorite here. People are just buying into that zero on his win-loss record in the loss department, and they're ignoring the fact that, I mean, he could have 3, maybe even 4 losses if he hadn't been able to pull out these 3rd-round stoppages in his last 4 fights. So I think this is just a huge step up in competition for Ortega, and I don't think that he's ready for it. His stand-up is improving, but it's definitely not going to be on Cub Swanson's level, and I think Cub Swanson walks away with this one. I don't know if he'll get a stoppage or anything, but as long as he does not get tapped out, and it's possible, I mean, Cub Swanson in his 3, has been submitted 3 times, by Lamas and Edgar and Holloway. Again, those are 3 of the top 5 featherweights on the roster. And I just don't think Brian Ortega, personally, I don't know if he's even a top 10 featherweight on the roster, whether alone the number 6, like, the UFC rankings have him. I just don't think that he's ready. So, I think Cub Swanson pieces him up on the feet and walks away with a one-sided unanimous decision, if not a knockout at some point. So my pick is going to be Cub Swanson. So that'll do it for our full event breakdown for UFC Fight Night 123. Our premium bets for the event will be released this Friday following the weigh-in, so stay tuned for that if you're an MMA Oddsbreaker premium member. If we have a free play to give out, make sure to follow at @MMAOBPremium on Twitter, because that's where we'll post them first. We can also notify you of our free bets via email alert if you prefer that method. Just send an email to picks@MMAoddsbreaker.com and we'll add you to our free bet mailing list. Special thanks to our sponsor, 5 Dime Sportsbook. Good luck, everyone, and hopefully the betting gods are on your side this weekend.